Business must be good at the Addictions Recovery Center in Medford. ARC, as it is often known, is in the process of expanding, adding to staff and services. Its name says it all. It is in the business of helping people recover from substance abuse addictions. Here's our chance to find out more about the history of the operation and where it is heading now. Dr. Sean Sills is the medical director at ARC and evidently dropped off the phone over the course of the last couple of minutes. So we need to hang up on that line and go ahead and try to get him back on now as we talk to Sean Sills. ARC obviously has been in business in the Rogue Valley for a fair amount of time now. Understand it started in the Grants Pass area about 40 years ago. And Dr. Sean Sills can fill us in on that when we get him back on the line. This is not an uncommon occurrence here that people will will get off the phone because we have these silences that go on while we're getting up to the point of introducing the show itself. And so when we get to that point, people hear silences and think we've hung up on them, and that is not, in fact, the case. So Sean Sills is going to be on one of our caller lines right now, but here he is. Dr. Sean Sills, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
You bet. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing great.
So I just gave a brief thumbnail sketch filling time there. About 40 years ago, you started in the Grants Pass area. Is that right?
About 10 years ago.
Really?
In the Medford area.
Mm-hmm. All right. So give us the broader history of ARC then and what it was formed to do, what need it was trying to fill at the time.
The Addiction Recovery Center, I started with that actually this last year, and what we've been doing is medically monitored detox for patients who are suffering from alcoholism, opiate addiction, methamphetamines, and so forth.
Medically monitored detox, meaning what?
Yeah. Well, what that is, Jeff, is for patients who are alcoholics or they're having trouble coming off of substances, we bring them into our facility, and then we use medications to help safely detox them off of their medications. But that's just one of the things that I do. The other thing is our pain clinic, Touchstone Interventional Pain Center. And in that facility, we treat chronic pain.
All right. So you wear a couple of hats, I understand, at a couple of different agencies. And we'll be talking about both of those here. I do want to focus a little bit on ARC first, if that's all right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you bet, Jeff.
So when you talk about the medically monitored detox and the drugs you use to get people off, describe that process a bit, because many people are not aware of what goes on.
Well, yeah, one of the big roadblocks to getting in recovery and getting off of substances is that initial withdrawal period. For some patients, it's miserable. For other patients, it can actually be life-threatening. And so, for instance, coming off of benzodiazepines, coming off of alcohol, some other substances, you can actually have a seizure and die. The opiates, when you come off, you feel like you're going to die, but you don't die, but you just feel so miserable. And so that roadblock to recovery, that's where we come in. And what we do is we provide a facility where we monitor the patients. We have nursing staff, physicians, and we will put the patients on other medications that allow them to safely detox off of alcohol, off of opiates. And then within about 2 to 5 days, they get through the protocol, and then they're off their alcohol, they're off their opiates. And then with the ARC, what we do, what's unique with our detox center is we actually then from that first step of detox, we send them to residential or extended care treatment and try to get them into a recovery program for lifelong abstinence.
I noticed that the detox itself is not treatment, judging by the terminology used. So how long often is the treatment following the detox itself?
Usually we recommend between 30 to 90 days in a intensive inpatient residential treatment center. And then the treatment for addiction is lifelong. It requires a lifelong commitment to recovery principles. And often that's in going to AA meetings or NA meetings or other support groups.
You are expanding at ARC. I notice even hiring more people. What's up there?
Unfortunately, Jeff, our county, our valley, has been hit hard with addiction of all sorts of substances. The most recent epidemic is the heroin and pain medicine and opiate addiction. And there's probably not a family that doesn't have a brother, a sister, a mother, a father that's suffering from addiction. So this is just something that's very prevalent. Probably the stats are about 15 to 20% of the population has an addictive disorder, which you're talking, you know, several million Americans who suffer from addiction. So I think that's what we're seeing is in the ARC, we're expanding because there's just a huge need for treatment for addiction.
We're talking to Dr. Sean Sills, who's the medical director at ARC, the Addictions Recovery Center, based in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about issues of addiction and treatment. 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Given the level of addiction you're talking about now, how many people, and I'm sure ARC is not the only entity of its kind in the area, but how many can you take at one time, and what's generally the waiting list? Is there a waiting list for services?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our facility right now is 8 beds, so we can take up to 8 patients at a time. Right now, we're the only medically monitored detox center in our county, even including up to Josephine County. I think Eugene is the next place for detox, and then some in Portland. So We're thinking we're fulfilling a good need for that initial set, but there are other programs out there that work with recovery and try to get patients into recovery.
How much of an adjustment period, Dr. Sills, is there when a new drug appears on the market and an addiction, not that any drug is necessarily new, but you get some wrinkles, I would assume, but how long a lag between the time that something comes onto the market and people begin to get addicted to it and protocols are developed for dealing with those, or are the protocols pretty well established from dealing with other drugs in the past?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes, you know, we'll get a medication that comes on market and even though the FDA does its best to look at substances and their potential for abuse and addiction, sometimes it's aftermarket where we realize that medications are more addictive than we originally suspected. A couple examples, one would be like tramadol. When tramadol first came to the market, we thought that it had a low risk of addiction and so forth. And what we found is that actually it is addictive, and there's been many patients who have developed addiction, and that ended up with us reclassifying it as a controlled substance, I think it's in the last couple of years. Another medication that we use a lot is Lyrica and gabapentin. Both of those are used to treat nerve pain. And what we found is that there's also some addictive potential with those medicines. So there is a lag time. The fortunate thing is that, you know, the protocols to deal with addiction, there's a lot of overlap. So when we see addictive behavior around one substance, we do have an idea of how to treat it and how to address it.
How different would the approaches be, say, though, for dealing with a meth addiction and an opioid addiction?
Yeah, those are good questions. You know, the addictive disorder, the addictive disease process is in the same place of in the brain, whether it's alcoholism, meth addiction, opiate addiction, they all work on the dopamine reward system in the brain. And so, believe it or not, the detox is the only part that is maybe a little bit drug-specific and how you would treat it. But the addictive process and how we treat it is all the same. We work with 12-step facilitation programs with AA and NA, individual and group counseling, and then extended monitoring and something we call contingency management. Those are the same tools that we use for every patient, whether they're suffering from alcohol, meth, or heroin addiction.
Okay, so some basic central tenets that are common to all programs to get people off of whatever the substance may be.
That's right.
So then you get into the issue of residential versus day treatment. I mean, what factors decide who is best positioned for either one of those?
You know, that's a good question. You know, some patients are able to have a stable enough home environment where they can stay at home and then go to outpatient and get therapy and get taught some tools of recovery and principles and succeed in that environment. But other patients maybe don't have that. Maybe their life situation is such that there's so much chaos that their home is actually not a safe environment, and they need to be taken out of their home environment and put in a very protected facility that has boundaries and has structure and isolates them from the insanity of their world. Or they've been out in the outpatient world and they've tried that, and they just haven't succeeded. Addiction's one of these diseases where it's a true state of powerlessness. It's a state of, I can't do it. There's complete loss of control. And so in that kind of state, it may be that that patient needs to be taken out of that and put in a place where they have a protected environment to find recovery.
And then what are the prospects for continued recovery if the person ends up reentering the environment from which they came and in which the addiction developed?
Yeah, and those are things that we consider when a patient leaves residential treatment, looking at triggers in their environment that may cause a relapse. And it's difficult, but it can be done. Patients often have to make some changes in their life, changes with people that they're associated with, friends, and even sometimes family members that may still be in an addictive process and may have to break those relationships. So to get in recovery, it can require some radical changes in your life.
Dr. Sean Sills is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the medical director at ARC Addictions Recovery Center based in Medford, but involved with some other ventures we're about to talk about as well. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 with questions and comments about substance abuse addiction and the treatment thereof. You can also put emails into jx@jeffnet.org. Sean, I noticed with the medical providers trying to wean people from opioids, there's a much broader discussion of late about ways to manage pain without medication, and that is a large part of what you're involved with outside of ARC, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. What I also do is I work in a field called interventional pain management. And what that is, it's a specialty devoted to trying to treat pain without the use of opiates and dangerous medication.
So there are things like, I noticed spinal cord stimulation, or SCS, is one of the things going on. How proven and how long existing is this technology?
Yeah, spinal cord stim is a great technology. It's actually been around for years, like 20-plus years. But what we're excited about is a new advance in technology that the FDA recently approved in May of 2015. And what this new advancement is, it's a superior type of technology where we stimulate over the spinal cord, and we stimulate in a way that it blocks out back pain and leg pain regardless of the origin. So we're excited because we think there's a lot of patients out there who suffer from back pain or leg pain or back and leg pain, and maybe they've had spine surgery, but they still have severe pain. This is a device that can significantly help their pain.
And so is it a one-time treatment? Is it something that stays with them? How does this all work?
Yeah, the way that it works, it actually is something that is a surgery that's implanted. Much like a pacemaker, the device has a battery. We make two small incisions. We place the electrodes through one incision behind the spinal cord. We use another incision to place the battery that produces a signal to the spinal cord. And the way that we do the process, it's two stages. The first stage is a trial, because the technology doesn't work for everybody. And what we do in the trial is we place temporary electrodes for about a week, and we give that patient that week to see if they get pain relief. And what the studies have shown, it was a study that was recently published in October of 2015, and what the studies are showing is about 80% of patients are getting at least 50% relief of their back and or leg pain.
Which is a good margin, I would think.
It's huge. And not only that, of those 80% that are responding, and there's about two-thirds of them that are actually having pain remission, which is their pain is going from an 8 or 9 out of 10 down to like a 2 or 2.5 out of 10. So, I was skeptical, to be honest with you, Jeff, when this came out in the studies. It's kind of like you have to prove it to me or I have to see it for myself. And What I'm happy to report is we've now trialed and implanted several patients, and we've had some really amazing stories. You know, the old technology worked great, and we would definitely have our home runs. But with this technology, we're treating pain that we weren't able to treat before. For example, back pain. We had a hard time with the old technology consistently covering back pain. But with the new technology, we can cover back pain as easy as we could cover leg pain. Another successful thing is neuropathy. We had a hard time with the old technology treating severe neuropathy from like diabetes and other causes, burning in the feet, pins and needle sensation in the feet. And with the new technology, we've had patients that we've implanted who were like 8, 9, 10 out of 10 pain down to like a 1. And the nice thing is, what also is great about this technology is the old technology, patients would get an uncomfortable shocking sensation. About 40% of the time, patients would complain of this paresthesia, uncomfortable shocking. With the new technology, there's no stimulation like that. They don't feel any shocking sensation. So patients, on the whole, tolerate it better.
We're talking to Sean Sills on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Sean Sills, in a couple of his capacities, he is the medical director at ARC Addictions Recovery Center in Medford, also involved with Touchstone Interventional Pain Center in Medford and Grants Pass. And we're talking about technologies to get rid of pain in one sense and then get rid of addiction in the other sense. Join us on the Exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned some of the issues with implantation in the first place, which raises the question, are some people a little reluctant to get things implanted, and how much incision work or stuff goes on? I mean, how long is the recovery from just getting the devices to stimulate the spinal cord?
Those are great questions. The surgery, as compared to other surgeries a lot of patients have had, like back surgeries, fusions, and so forth, is pretty minor. It's an outpatient surgery. The incisions are small. They're about 1 to 2 inches, one in the midline of the back and one where we implant the battery, which is usually on the flank or in the buttocks. And the recovery, it's not bad. Patients have some post-procedural pain on the order of like anywhere from 2 days to about a week, but that gradually subsides just like any post-surgical pain. And and compared to surgeries that are out there, it's what we would consider a fairly minor outpatient surgery.
So, healed. And then once they're implanted, when do they have to come back for new batteries or new devices or anything like that?
The technology is similar to other rechargeable systems. So what's great about this, the spinal cord stimulators in today's technology is the battery is rechargeable. And so just like your Sonicare toothbrush, you put it in the magnet, there's a magnet that goes over the battery. And while patients are at home watching TV, they place the battery or the magnet over the battery, and it recharges itself through the skin.
All right.
So the batteries can stay in. I can't remember the FDA approval on the Nevro system, but I believe it's like 10, 15 years. And in some cases, the battery may last much longer than that.
Okay, I'm going to have to put you on hold to take a phone call here, but stand by. We have Sean Sills on the line with us, and here is Tim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, very quick question. What ability do the group have in separating the cause of pain, social, emotional, from physical? I mean, some of the social and emotional causes of pain can go back years and years and years.
Okay, thanks for that, Jim, and sorry I called you Tim. So back to you then, Sean Sills. I mean, when you're dealing with pain, how much of a history do you go into to find that if it could be something other than physical?
Yeah, that's, pain is complex. It's complex to define. It's more than just what we call nociception or just input from pain nerves. There's a emotional component to it. There's a social component. There's an interpretation of those painful signals that a patient will categorize as pain and suffering. And so all that comes into play when we look at a patient that has chronic back and leg pain. Definitely their coping strategies, their emotional content, their anxiety, their depression, all that will feed into the pain. And so what we do in our pain clinic is we look at all those things. We have a counselor. We try to address some of the emotional components, some of the mental, some of the ideas and behaviors around that pain that may actually be making that pain worse. And then also what we do in our interventional pain clinic is we try to also deal with the anatomy and identify the pain generator and see if we can treat it. What's pretty cool about the Nevro, the spinal cord stimulator device, is that we don't understand exactly how it's working, but somehow by providing this high-frequency stimulation of the spinal cord, it's taken away that hypersensitivity wind-up phenomena that we see in a chronic pain state. And what I've seen in my patients is that you take that away, and a lot of times the emotional state comes back down to normal. The coping strategies come back to normal. When we treat pain with chronic pain medicines, I don't think we're as effective in treating those emotional states. In some ways, we just kind of numb the mind, numb the emotions, but we don't really treat the core issues. And over time, those pain medicines seem like they're making things worse for a large part of patients.
With an eye on the two hats you wear, pain management at Touchstone and addiction management at ARC, what do you make of the rise of recreational marijuana in Oregon? Will it create more people who are able to regulate pain effectively, or just create more addictions, or what do you see happening there?
You know, Jeff, that's a hard question to answer. I think, unfortunately, there will be an expansion of addiction and misuse, unfortunately, with marijuana. But there's also some evidence that the marijuana or some of the actual active metabolites may actually be helpful for treating pain. So there may be some pros and cons on it in the future.
All right. Much we've learned in this segment. Dr. Sean Sills is the medical director at ARC, the Addictions Recovery Center in Medford, and also works with the Touchstone Interventional Pain Center in Medford and Grants Pass. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.